You know, we all have a lot of data, and it has to positively, absolutely stay safe.
It can't get into the wrong hands, and the biggest challenge we have is how to transfer it from here to there. We all know as leaders that legacy tools that transfer our important files and sensitive data are mostly outdated and fall short on security, especially with the demands of today's remote workforce. Relying on outdated technology puts our organization's brand at risk, and that is unacceptable. So we are excited to invite you to step into the future of completely secured managed file transfer from our friends at Kiteworks. Kiteworks is absolutely, positively the most secure managed file platform on the market today. They've been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. And unlike traditional legacy systems with limited functionality, Kiteworks has unmatched software security with ongoing bounty programs and regular pen testing to minimize vulnerabilities. And the coolest part, they have easy to use one-click appliance updates you will love. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com to get started today. And now the show. Hey, cybercrime junkies. This is your host, David Morrow. So in today's episode, we have the opportunity to speak with security expert and internationally known notorious hacker, Chris Roberts. This is the second of a two-part series where we're able to sit down and interview Chris. In this one, you're going to find Chris, always a consummate gentleman, and he's going to be able to share some fascinating stories of infamous hacks. The Mars rover, Amtrak, Chicago's Metro Station, and even a United Kingdom bank that he hacked back when he was only 14 years old. Even more, Chris outlines challenges facing security leaders today, explains the hacker mentality, and leading frameworks like the MITRE ATT&CK methodology and great ways to help small businesses and nonprofits, families, and our loved ones stay safe in today's day and age. We'll also discuss the role of outside partners and security teams to help internal IT teams, and the fact that some vendors need to caution and be careful with the words that they use, because words are powerful. And when they overpromise, sometimes it can lead to disastrous results for organizations' brands. So come listen and get inspired. This is the story of the shocking hacks, hacker mentality, and a sit-down discussion with expert Chris Roberts. Lucky to work for a great group of people you really believe in.
Find yourself making an impact.
Technology is a river that flows through every aspect of an organization, and today is different. We put ourselves and our organizations literally at risk of complete destruction every single time we get online. One click, one distraction is all it takes. Hi, Cybercrime Junkies. This is your host, David Morrow, along with co-host Mark Mosher.
Come join us as we explore our research into these blockbuster true crime stories,
along with interviews of leaders who built and protect great brands. Hi, Cybercrime Junkies. So in this initial part of our sit down with expert Chris Roberts, we talked about his findings after just coming back from the Black Hat Hacker Convention in Las Vegas, and some of the unfounded claims that some vendors make, but how it all kind of ties together and relates. So let's check it out. Well, all right. So thank you for joining us, Chris. Again, we honestly appreciate your time. In the studio today is expert in counterintelligence, deceptive technologies, well-respected CISO, notorious hacker, and leading security expert for Fortune 500 companies and more, Chris Roberts. So, Chris, welcome to the studio, and thanks for making it in today. So,
yes, we do appreciate it. We do appreciate it.
Back from
problem. You're
back from the romps from
back from the madness of Vegas.
Yeah. So. Well, we can get to that. So, we have several things we want to talk to you about today. One of the first ones, I mean, we realize there's no silver bullet in security, and when, I think I saw your post on LinkedIn and some of your other comments, and I always feel the same way. I mean, we work for a vendor, but we're very careful when we talk about, the cybersecurity is not solved, right? Like, there's no fixing people, right? Like, these are different vendors offer different layers of security that can help, et cetera. But it's a holistic approach. Every organization is different. Tell me what your feedback is from seeing what you saw at Black Hat last week.
I think it's frustrating. Because as an industry, we have unfortunately overpromised and in many cases underdelivered.
Yeah.
And it's, we use words have power.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we've lost is, in life. And I mean, you've only got to look at today's internet, whereas one wrong word or one wrong phrase or sentence, unfortunately, can condemn somebody. I mean, no two ways about it. Now, there's a whole question of engage brain before opening mouth. No two ways about that.
But we're still humans too, with like millions of years of biology behind us. So that filter doesn't always work.
Yes, but
even the best intentioned.
In our industry, when we have one job, when you think about it, we in information security have one job, and that's to protect.
Protect.
That's exactly it. That's right. Our job. That nothing else matters. Mm-hmm. Our job is to protect. Yet we have taken those words so out of context. We've promised people that we can put software on the systems and look after them. And we've said we can look after you. And in human terms, look after means you've got my back. And we use it in military. Hey, I got your back. Great. Right. That means when I'm asleep, I know somebody's got cover fire.
Right.
But in our world, we can't promise that, yet we still do. We can do the best of it we possibly can. I can help you understand risk as best as I know. Mm-hmm. I can help you maybe mitigate some of those risks.
Right.
I can help you reduce those risks. I can help you maybe understand what is going on out in the internet. I can help you understand all these things, and I can help you make a more informed decision. But what I can't do is protect you. And what I definitely can't do is eliminate risk. And I think one of the vendors was out there, and they've managed to eliminate, human error. And I'm like, well done.
Oh, I would love that, right?
Well done, little buddies.
Eliminate human error?
Yeah, I mean, what was it? We've been creeping around in modern era for, 200,000 to 300,000 years? Last 60,000 years or so really is what we count.
Right.
And in that time, we've failed to actually screw around with human error. We've got some pretty good examples of it. And apparently, according to them, they've done it. They've solved human error. And I'm like, you arrogant bunch of.
Right.
There is no way of doing that. I mean, some of the services, I mean, I agree with you because the services have a role in the stack, right? Like of all of the layers. And when we talk about the human component, like my big thing is, I don't care how much you put on the infrastructure and all the layers, right? When we don't educate the people in a comprehensive, ongoing way, it doesn't matter. We're going to let them in. Like it doesn't, they're going to get around the firewall. They're going to get around all the other infrastructure and everything else. So to me, it's about focusing on getting even the users to a level that can even begin to visualize a human firewall because it's nowhere near that. Right? They use that phrase human firewall and stuff. I'm like, it's open season right now in most organizations.
Understatement. And even if we manage to effectively educate and we manage to give us, the human, the tools, we still make mistakes. I still click things. There are times. There have been times when I've gone, oh, heck. And in that moment when you've got 10 other balls juggling and you go, oh, and you go, and you're like, yep. you stupid son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I learned something from you last time about cookies. And that was really interesting because now every website I go to, I'm like, I'm not accepting cookies. I'm going through and they have like the marketing ones, the performance ones, but then they have like the required ones for the site to even work. I'm like, I'll accept that, but none of the others.
And they've gotten sneaky. Because the browsers are like, you know, allow necessary cookies and block third-party cookies. Well, now the sites have gotten little sneakies, and they're not third-party cookies anymore. There are trusted partners cookies. So now you're – and this is where, again, I've got my browser protection. Well, that's only as good as we are at not lying. And now the sites are like, oh, these 300 extra cookies we'd like to give you – that they're not tracking. There are our partners who enable and enhance and elevate your experience. I'm like, no, you're sorry, ass is selling my data.
So in this next part, we discuss detection with Chris Roberts. And what we mean by that is the real-time awareness that something bad is going to happen. We all need an ability to catch things in real time so that it's not months or weeks that go by that bad things are happening that we're not aware. And in the digital space, this is particularly critical. So let's give it a listen. That's so funny. So let's talk about detection, and then I want to get into deception. Because I think your talks on – I've seen a lot of your talks on deception. And it's fascinating. But detection is really key. When we talk about internal – security teams or internal IT teams, and then engaging with vendors, it has to be a partnership, certainly.
Right.
It has to be a collaboration. It has to be something ongoing, you know, back and forth, sharing of data, sharing of changes in the organization. But detection to me is, because we're never going to stop something.
No.
Knowing it as soon as possible.
Yeah,
I would think is
about really as good important. As you can get.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also so, again, if you think about it, traditional detection is waiting for something to happen.
Right.
You know, it's a perfect example in the real world is a nuclear test. So if you do a nuclear test, the first time that or a star explodes, your detection is when at an atomic level, something hits a sensor.
Right.
Now, we're the same way. If you think about it digitally, the first time typically we know something happens is when something hits the firewall intrusion detection or an endpoint.
Right.
To me, that's where it gets really interesting because we should be able to look over the parapet or on the tech of a nuclear test or a star. We can observe. We can actually look over the top of our equipment and go, you know, we built that bloody thing and we kind of know what's going to happen and we know what particles are going to come off of it. So we kind of have a pretty good idea of how much shit's going to come in our direction.
Right.
And to me, that's where you get into the threat intelligence side of detection, which is you actually put your head above the parapet and go, hey, what's coming at me?
Right.
And in the digital world, you know, it's a perfect example. I mean, Boom. Boom is probably a good example of that. Up till 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had a set of targets that we looked at on the outside. You know, we kept a good ear and a good eye on the ground as to who was interested in us. Then we announced a partnership with a pretty well-known government, quasi-government entity that does a lot of work in that. And all of a sudden, the chatter and the traffic of people that were interested in us or organizations that were paying attention to us went, "Bjoosh."
Wow.
Now, we could have waited to see those attacks against our firewalls and stuff, or we got a bit of a heads up because we saw chatter, we saw conversation, so we kind of knew what was coming at us. At least so that we could go, hey, how are our detection capabilities? How well have we managed to get our logs and our algorithms and our DNS and all those other good things that we need to have in place to make sure that when something hits us, we actually, touch wood, get better eyes on it?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and using frameworks, right? Like, walk us through like the importance of the MITRE ATT&CK framework when organizations are using that, because that's something we really believe in, and I think it really helps, but it's hard to explain to regular people sometimes or business owners. And it's like, it's not just an idea. Like, this is, it's the framework in which the attacks come in, and learning that is and operating in that framework is critical.
Well, it's
can
good
you walk to us through that.
Yeah, it's good to explain to people. I think it's, you know, you hit the nail on the head. It's all about communication. Again, we can sit here as technology, and actually, I put a LinkedIn post out about it today, and I did it in Scottish. It was kind of fun. But it was one of those where, in a technology world, we can turn and say, "Oh, bad guys are coming after us." Well, let's break that down. What are they doing? Let's talk about the steps. How do we do reconnaissance? How do we do initial analysis? How do we do research? How do we get in? How do we pivot? What the hell does pivot actually mean? Mm-hmm. You know, and then you talk about all of that. How do we do analysis? So the fun thing about the MITRE framework's done a fantastic job of actually giving us almost that communication capability to go, hey, it's established, it's well known. And then you can drill down into each one of those areas and go, well, how effective are we at understanding what this whole thing means? How would we understand whether something gets taken out of our environment? Right. How would we even understand to look for command and control centers or anything else that might help us? So that's great. And then honestly, from a vendor standpoint, being able to sit there and look at the vendors and go, you know, hey, where do you fit into this? You know, I know I've got good coverage here and I got some good stuff here, but I know I'm missing this section here. How well do you provide effective coverage in this environment without lying to me?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You know, we all have a lot of data, and it has to positively, absolutely stay safe.
It can't get into the wrong hands, and the biggest challenge we have is how to transfer it from here to there. We all know as leaders that legacy tools that transfer our important files and sensitive data are mostly outdated and fall short on security, especially with the demands of today's remote workforce. Relying on outdated technology puts our organization's brand at risk, and that is unacceptable. So we are excited to invite you to step into the future of completely secured managed file transfer from our friends at Kiteworks. Kiteworks is absolutely, positively the most secure managed file platform on the market today. They've been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. And unlike traditional legacy systems with limited functionality, Kiteworks has unmatched software security with ongoing bounty programs and regular pen testing to minimize vulnerabilities. And the coolest part, they have easy to use one-click appliance updates you will love. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com to get started today. And now the show. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how you do threat hunting without it. Right.
It's tough. Right. But here's the thing. So this is where it gets really interesting. I quite honestly, no company should be doing threat hunting if they don't know their own environment. It drives me nuts that you've got people like, oh, we need threat hunters. Well, tell me what assets you have. Tell me fundamentally, do you know what is in your corporation today?
Exactly. Internet of things, devices, everything else. Because there's so many things that they don't know.
Because if you don't know that, why the heck are you out there bouncing around like a freaking over-caffeinated squirrel when you actually need to be understanding what the hell's in your own environment? Because if you don't know what the hell you've got or what it's doing, how the hell are you going to protect it?
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. Have you seen an influx of the delta between what organizations think they have and what they actually have in light of the pandemic? Because I think because of the pandemic, they threw so many devices out there.
They changed the whole environment of just about everybody's landscape.
It exploded.
Yes.
It went from, it's been really interesting because at one point we thought we had a pretty good handle on it. And then all of a sudden you're like, guys, so 90% or 80% of my workforce is now working from home. How do I quantify the risk of this corporate computer? I mean, I'm working from my lab space. How do I quantify the risk of this corporate asset on a network? Mine doesn't share everything because mine's segmented because I'm an ass. But unlike most people's corporate network where, you know, the you can yell and Alexa or Siri is going to answer you. Right. And the security system is on the same network and the television's also talking to the internet because and the little kids are upstairs doing their thing and your significant other's doing their thing. And all of a sudden you've gone from a corporate kind of managed-ish environment where you can tell the ingress and egress to this scatter bomb approach of goodness. And the fridge, by the way, is getting pissed off with the microwave. And right. Won't talk to
in the washer and dryer are about to talk to each other as well.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Well, I mean, that's where, I mean, endpoint detection, I think, is so critical now, more so even than 10 years ago. Like, with people all over.
All right. So, devil's advocate. Let me play devil's advocate. And I'm not disagreeing, but let me play devil's advocate for a minute. We talk about endpoints.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to look at everything. So we're talking about the watch, the fridge, the microwave, because all that can affect the network. All that can get to your network. So now you're talking about putting a solution on between, best as we know, between about 19 and 40 billion devices.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, and we've got to watch it. And we don't have enough people to watch the darn stuff. So we've got to put orchestration in place. But how do I tell what's legit versus not legit versus who should have access and should Siri be actually reading my Word document back to me and all these other things? So as much as we like to think the endpoint is the thing, my concern is back to the data. So, you know, we honestly want to know what assets we have in the physical world, but kind of want to know what digital assets. I want to know what data you think you have, and especially the stuff that's going to kill you.
Yep.
What's going to take your organization down if I post it on the internet?
Or what about the programs where there's endpoint like detection and response, and they use the MITRE ATT&CK framework?
Yeah, so like the security orchestra, basically playbooks. In other words, if it sees something, it does something. Yeah.
Right.
Are
they at least helpful?
Yes. I think anything's helpful. Rephrase that. I think anything well implemented and architected is helpful.
I think that's the key. If it's not implemented well, if it's not configured correctly, if it's not monitored or maintained, it's not a set and forget type of security service. You can't do that.
Which now means that we have to put onus on both parties. One, your vendor / your trusted provider has actually got to help you pick and assess and implement well. But me as the CISO, I have to be a good custodian of this. Mm-hmm. I can't put it in simply to put a tick in the compliance box.
Right.
I have to put it in effectively. I have to get professional services. So I make the stupid thing actually goes in. And kind of like in the real world, the house, it requires maintenance.
Well, it's like when we see pen testing. We see pen testing across the industry, and some of it is just crap. Some of it is just scans and scans, and they're just justifying a fee. And I'm like, how about some ethical hacking? Like, how about ethical hacking? And don't tell us 1,000 different things that really no one's going to exploit, but you're going to make me go and fix it. How about, like, you tell me really what are the 3 or 4 things that I should fix right now? I want a snapshot in time. I want to know what they would actually do.
Yeah, send me a screen scrape of my inbox and tell me how you got there. And then we can talk.
But it's tough, though, because, I mean, if you think about it, again, let's take a step back and go intrinsically, I know where my issues are. If I'm honest, and this is coming back to the human. If I look myself in the mirror and go, I already know some of the stuff I have to fix.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to spend money on a penetration test or an assessment until I've at least got those done, because it's a waste of money.
Absolutely.
Once I get to that point where I don't know what I don't know, and I become dangerous if I assume I know everything. Once I get to that point, that to me is where you bring that trusted assessment team in and go, hey,
give me another. And that's the discussion we have often.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. When you know there's certain things obvious, why have a snapshot now? You know this is bloody.
I can get your bloody inbox because you know you've got a whole bunch of AWS, you've got a bunch of accounts, and by the way, you know, you're not training your users, so I'm just gonna I'm gonna ask somebody to click on something because I need something done. I mean, it's
Hi, Cybercrime Junkies. So in this next section, we talk about the importance of all of us being more aware, keeping security top of mind, knowing what to look for, and the training that organizations need to get better at for everybody that gets online. Because no matter how much an organization spends on infrastructure and systems and all that geeky stuff, the truth is that us, each one of us, the people, put our organizations at risk every single day that we get online. And so to hear what Chris has to say about it is really, really impactful. Let's check it out.
You know, there's...
Well, let's talk about that, training the users. I mean, it's so important. We do this. Oh. We've been doing these trainings. We've been doing them a lot. We're part of InfoGuard, Mark and I. We've been doing these alongside federal law enforcement for like 10 years. And we do them at no cost, and there's no sales pitch behind it. We just do it because it's got to be done. Because some of these organizations we do it for, Chris, it's the only thing they do all year.
That's it.
Like, how is the how am I the only voice of reason about your digital life? Like, it scares me. Like,
because that's what compliance tells me I got
to
do.
Because they have to check the box. We have the guys come in, so we got to check the box.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I can check that box now.
And it's about caring. Like, there's so much stuff that is free online for awareness training. There's so many things they could do. There's good platforms out there. There's you know, the Noble Four. We actually manage the Noble Four platform, and again, it's not a silver bullet. It's not going to fix humans, but it's
So you saw that post I put out, and you saw that post I put out, the you know, the one that talked about fixing the humans.
Oh, was that before?
Oh yeah, that was those. Oh wow, what's it? Yeah, so
well, yeah, that's the platform that we use, but our SOC actually does it and implements it, and they customize it.
Yeah, this so is that, why I got to be honest.
They shouldn't be over promising like that, because it's a tough.
They did, and you know, you've got how many people running through Black Hat that saw that? I mean, that's So that's those little buddies, I'm afraid. So this is why I love the Wiser guys, like Gabriel and the guys over there. To me, that's mission
platform. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, it's but again, so this is exactly to your point. It's helping everybody inside the organization learn how to look after themselves. Yeah. It's not teaching you not to send stuff and not to do stuff and not to, it's actually helping. And I think this is where there's a difference, because if I train you once a year for compliance, then great, I got my tick in the box, but it's useless. But if I actually go, hey, look, you understand,
it's got to be part of the culture too. Don't you think? It's got to be ingrained.
And it's got to come from the top down. You know, your leadership has got to actually embrace it. You can't have everybody else do it but the leader, because the leader doesn't think they need to be trained. That's where you lead by example, and leadership's going like, hey, we just did it. I ran internal training at Boom, first training course we ran at Boom, an internal brand bag session, and we had literally half the company showed up, and it was a lunchtime session. We kind of ad hoc'd it, and we had about half the company, and it was freaking awesome. Bunch of feedback afterwards, bunch of conversations. Right. We're running another one next month. And we'll keep doing these, and we'll do the official training. So we want to help people. How do I look after my parents and grandparents? Yep. What do I do when I travel? How do I help my kids? How do I help this? How do I do that? And it just gets people thinking.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because that's, to me, security's got to be top of mind. When you fire up your laptop, you need to be thinking, what am I putting out there? Where am I making myself vulnerable? And just being aware of that. It's like when you walk into a bad neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
You're aware when you hear bottles rattling in the alley over there, you know not to turn left into the alley. Right. But if you're not aware, you're just going to keep walking, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's that awareness. That's just, it's like a sixth sense. You just have to have it. And, to me, it's just something it can't be periodic. It can't be once a quarter. It's got to be on a regular basis.
Yeah,
once a year, you're not going to get it done. But it's not that it doesn't create behavioral modification.
Yeah, I mean, I put it out there. I have a set of presentations I use, and one of the slides on them, you know, it takes me 1 minute to take your email, 1 minute to take your phone, 1 minute to do this, 1 minute to compromise you. Yet it takes me between 7 and 20 times to get you to think about something. So you do it once a year. I'm 7 years into this before you even open an eyelid and maybe consider it. At that point, I mean, it's game over. It's so far game over. It's not even funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, even,
I mean,
even
I think that I think the idea and the the platforms that are out there, the test phishing, it helps. Like it helps so long as it's done as part of a comprehensive culture shift and a dedication of people that care.
And I think to that point, again, we talk about people. I made a promise when I started at Boom, and I will hold to that promise, because a couple of people are like, oh my gosh, you're going to come in and run phishing tests. I'm like, no, I'm not. Why would I set you up to fail? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you need to get a baseline of where everybody is. I'm like, I know where y'all are at. I don't need a baseline. Why do we need to make a fool of certain people before I actually kind of know where you are? I know the industry well enough. I know that 50% of you are going to say yes, and 50% of you will actually know. I don't need to know anything else other than that. What I need to do is get everybody up to a baseline, and then we'll start playing games, and then I'll start putting some fun stuff out. But only when I have given you the opportunity to learn, to educate, to understand, to train, and given you the tools, only then am I going to test you to see how you do. And I think, unfortunately, too many companies do it the wrong way around. Too many companies are like, oh, we'll do a phishing test and we'll deal with the results. No, because now you make people feel like idiots, which means they don't act. Some of them will be like, to hell with you, and they don't want to learn anymore.
Right. Now, you have an effective change in the manner in which you wouldn't test a student before you teach them, right? Let me teach you and then I'll test you.
Well, it's like all education and all professional development. It's got to be ongoing. It's got to be job embedded, but there has to be an element of inspiration. You have to inspire them to want to learn it. Right?
I mean, we have in our profession the continual education credit, CPEs or whatever. Uh-huh. You almost, for whatever profession, I mean, if you're teaching people in the healthcare space, the physicians and everybody else's, they too have CPEs. I mean, if you made some of these tests like CPE eligible for a certain amount of it, then you've added an additional, even for us, you've added an additional level of incentive.
That's a great point.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening so far. Now we're getting to the absolute best part. It is the infamous hacks performed by Chris Roberts. Let's listen in.
So let's get into we don't want to let you go until we at least get into some cool things that I've seen. I don't want to rehash other things I know you've talked about numerous times, but I love the story when you're in Chicago and you're waiting for a train. Can you explain?
Can we talk about that?
We can talk about that one. Yeah, that one's good. That one won't get me yelled at. Not that I'm, unless anybody from like.
Yeah, we won't touch on anything that'll get you yelled at.
We're not going to call Amtrak or anybody. So.
No.
No, Amtrak's a different one. We managed to have fun with Amtrak. That was a very, very good friend of mine was flying, and we decided to do planes, trains, and automobiles. And I was actually on an Amtrak. So he hits me up. He's flying somewhere and he's like, hey, Amtrak was still at the time. I mean, who knows if they still are. Amtrak still had heartbleed issues on their, on some of the switches and routers. So you could actually sit on the client side of the Amtrak, run an exploit on their client side, network on the visitor guest network on the trains while you were sitting on the darn thing. And you could actually get into like the positive train control and the rest of the corporate network. So we were sitting at the station and he'd given me a shell in. I'd gotten onto the train. I'm like, all right, can we get this? So we ended up getting a scanner and we were trying to scan the cars as we were going by. So we could get like three-way shell straight through, do planes, trains, and automobiles. I mean, it's really one of those fun things to do.
Oh my gosh.
But the one you're talking about, this is
the one where you had it doing like the beat.
I remember. I still have the wave file from it.
I love that.
So we were out in Chicago at a conference out in Chicago. It still goes on these days. And it was like number one or number two. I can't remember if it was the day before because we talked a little bit about it on stage. But we'd gone out that evening and we'd found ourselves on the Chicago transit system. And, you know, at the time, I remember looking up and there's these old bloody screens and I'm like, well, what's controlling that thing? Mm-hmm. So out pops a laptop and a bunch of other things. And very quickly we're like, oh, actually we can get into these and have a little bit of fun. And, you know, they got the announcer's voice and they got the train now departing and stay, all these other things that they have on them. We're like, yeah, we don't want to mess with it too badly. We were going to have a little bit of fun with it. I'm like, I know what we can do. So ended up getting a recording of God Save the Queen Figured we'd have to, you know, we've got to repatriotize this country a little bit somehow. Figured I got God save
the Queen. Not the Sex Pistols version? Or is it
the Sex Pistols version? I've done Freddie Mercury. I did Freddie Mercury's God Save the Queen and on the Mars Rover. I got yelled at for that one, though.
Well, we're going to get into that one right after this one.
Oh, yeah. But this, we end up getting God Save the Queen, got the words and everything else, put it into Morse code, then rhythmed the Morse code so that you had da 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 da, and it was dot 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 dash dot dot dot, and it had this bloody symbols into it. So like, all right, can't make this too obvious. So there were certain things that happened during the day and during the night on these computers on the stations, and so we replaced the wave files for a couple of them so that at midnight for like 30 seconds. This one terminal in this one station plays God Save the Queen in Morse code. So,
That's hilarious. So then you did the same thing or something. You did the Freddie Mercury version on the Mars Rover.
Well, Eddie and I, so we'd been up at a GERCON up in Grand Rapids. It's an amazing conference up there. It's
I've heard about it. I've never been there. I've heard all about it.
Yeah, that's... GERCON's interesting. Chris and Jamie and the team that run it are freaking amazing. And I love it because it's still stayed pretty much the same size it's been for the last goodness knows how many years. They haven't gone crazy and expanded it. It's typically half students, half crazy geeks. And so many of us kind of call it second home. It's a really, really nice one. Good feeling. Good. Nice just to hang out. So, yeah, so we were up there years ago, and I was on stage and I was talking about minions and taking over humans and a whole bunch of other things. And I don't know what the hell we got into it, but somebody said, you need to take over the rover. And I'm like, well, I already got yelled at by NASA once or twice, but let's see if we can do it without getting too badly yelled at. So it was getting close to like the following year's GERCON, and I'm like, oh crap, we haven't done this, but we need to do something. So a bit of research, again, all threat intelligence, all research, all trying to figure out how does this stupid thing work? You know, sitting millions of miles away, how's the bloody thing work? How does it communicate? Where's the communication? Where's the uplink station? And bless their cotton socks, you know, being a government agency, they put everything on the internet.
Oh my gosh.
Well, they have.
And I mean, you were able to do this when it was on Mars.
This was when it was up there. We figured out where the uplink was, what the encryption was, what the algorithm was, how they talk about it, all these other good things. So we took a road trip, and we managed to figure out how to upload this thing carefully, and managed to get about 30 seconds of Freddie Mercury on Mars, which was much fun and much happiness.
Oh my God, that's
and Mars has never been the same since.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much, yeah. It's just like in Mad the Rover's, just like what the hell? NASA was. That was a fun one. Let's just say that.
Holy cow! So is that your favorite one of all the? What would be your favorite one?
Yeah, what would be the one that?
When you were a little boy? I thought at like 14 or something.
Oh, I got yelled at.
You got into like a bank or something.
Yeah,
Was that over in the UK?
Yeah, that was back over in the UK. My father had me arrested. he and I didn't see eye to eye. That didn't help the situation. Yeah, that was a Commodore 64.
Wow.
It was a Commodore 64 or Commodore 120. I can't remember. I think I replaced it with a 128 because it wasn't even mine. It was a friend's. And it was my Atari game machine. And we managed to war drive and got into the bank and, you know, default admin credentials and changed and not a hard password. You know, the reverse of the root tool, basically, if I remember right. Managed to move financial amounts of money from an account in my father's name to, you know, being a master criminal to an account in my name.
And, my.
Needless to say, he was none too amused, but as a kid, it was like my way of getting my own back. So, yeah, it didn't go down too well. Police turned up at the doorstep, and my mother just opened the door, and she just looked at me and was like, Christopher, it's for you.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so they didn't know what the hell to do. So I lost all of my equipment, had to replace my friend's computer. That was.
Oh, yeah, I read that.
Yeah, so.
Hey, what's the Dave thing that you're working on? It's for like small businesses? Yeah. What is that? Is it a device?
Yeah.
Or is it Is it a process?
There's a bunch of them sitting in the lab space. It's one of those things, again, as an industry, we're really good at going after like these Fortune, you know, Fortune 1000, 2000 companies. Companies put the trophy up on the wall and they're like, oh, I have caught a Fortune 500. Well done, me. Mm. That sucks. You know, there's what, 50 million, 30 million, whatever the hell it is, lots of small businesses in the US. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody really pays them attention. So we basically built Dave. Dave was built and it's designed.
Or they think that they're secure because they have an IT company, like a local IT company. Like, you're not for the ones.
Right. So Dave's designed really for the corner. It's designed for everybody from like four people up to 50 to 100 people companies. That's it. Nothing bigger. We also have it running in a bunch of like high net worth clients' houses and other things. Mm-hmm. And it's a little device and it sits on the network and underlying architecture, there's Untangle in there. We've got a whole bunch of other open source stuff in there. We've got some deception tech in there. We've got a couple of bunches of some darker Intel stuff in there. We've got a bunch of stuff in there, and it reports itself up to a nice portal. And either we can help them understand, or we can hand it off to their IT person. And it's just a set of eyes and ears into a network that they'd never have had in the first place. And it's done at a price point that's just freaking sensible that a 3 or 4 person dentist office can afford on a monthly basis. I mean, that's the whole logic for doing it.
So it has deception elements within it?
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. Mark and I were talking about this earlier, and I'm like, one of the coolest things I've heard you talk about is the deception element.
Yeah.
Like, walk us through that. I mean,
deception is nothing more than a digital minefield. And I mm-hmm. think that's probably the best way of looking at it.
When a hacker gets in, they see a group of villains.
I am a hacker. I am a hacker. Not a hacker.
Yeah, okay. But you're one of the good guys.
Adversary, criminal, bastard, anything along those lines. Not a hacker, though. True. Because as a hacker, we're good.
That's true. Right. You're right.
That's a valid statement.
That's it.
So as a criminal. Criminal gets in, they either want to take something or do something. And let's face it, back to that conversation, we're not going to stop somebody from getting in. So they get in. And once you're in, so I've managed to get onto a computer. Now, typically, I'm going to look around. I'm going to poke. I'm going to mess around. I'm going to look for credentials. So I'm going to look for shares. I'm going to look for printers. I'm going to look for drives. I'm going to look for data. I'm going to look for all these things. If I, using deception, can put a couple of sets of credentials on that computer. So I put, you know, I look at the credentials you have, and I've got a bit of logic in there that says, well, I'll make 3 or 4 more others, and there'll be a similar naming context. And by the way, I'll make sure that the last use date is within the next 15 days, 30 days, 6 days, 2 days, whatever. Right. And I do a few other things to make them actually blend in properly. And then I put a couple of other shares on there, and I put a printer on there, and I put some other, and I drop some documents and some other things in. I'm basically making a minefield. And if on the network I have something that looks and smells kind of like the rest of your network and does some other things, but the moment you ask for it or you touch it or you look at it in a funny way, it alerts.
That's great.
And if you do it that way, think about it. As a user of this computer, I'm not going to go hunting around for other credentials unless I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing.
Yep.
Right.
And if that's the case, then you've got a legitimate alert. If it sees a scan or it sees a sniff or it sees somebody asking for DNS or it sees, you know, we've got a set of criteria. If it sees any of this, it's going to say something, which means pay attention to this piece. So that's the logic, is to say, okay, let's get in the mind of the adversary. Again, back to MITRE. Perfect example is MITRE. MITRE gives us a really nice set of, if you're here, these are the 5 to 10 things that somebody's going to do next. Well, if I can mimic those, if I can build a minefield around each one of those effectively that blends in properly, that camouflages itself nicely, then I stand a much better chance of somebody tripping over that sodding thing and at least alerting me. So best case scenario, I get to know before damage happens. Worst case scenario, you lose one computer rather than the entire department or half your company.
Right. And is there a tracking element?
Absolutely.
So if they exfiltrate something, you can hopefully track it down or track them.
Yeah, or you know what's gone. So now you know whether you got a report. Now you know whether you're going to do anything about it. Now you know whether you have to care about it or any of these other things. Yeah. And some of the stuff that we have will call home if it gets opened. I mean, I do it all the time. Yeah, the gift card scams are fun for me. I get the gift card scam. And I'll send them because they want pictures. I'll send them pictures of gift cards until the cows come home. But they've all got payloads on them. So when somebody opens it up, I know where it is and I know what's going on. And either I can do something about it or I can't. Oh, yeah, I'm not nice. Well, I am nice. I'm giving them gift cards, just not the right ones.
That's brilliant.
You just send that email too.
That is absolutely brilliant.
That's excellent.
Oh, yeah.
So let me ask you this. What keeps you up at night?
Good question.
No, it is a good one, but it's stuff that I'm working on that I haven't yet released. So there's a few things the thing I'm talking about at GoCon probably won't release it. We'll see. I'm working on a couple of things. I got some stuff going on with biotechnology and nanotechnology. Mm-hmm. So the ability to basically take data without interacting with the system. So how do I take data either through here or through these? You know, how do I effectively exfiltrate data using basically body modulation of communication methodology at a biomechanic level? So fun stuff like that. I'm also working on some interesting stuff. I can take stuff out of the brain. I'm trying to figure out how to put stuff into the brain. So I'm a little bit of fun with that one too. And I can get it. Oh, yeah, there's some. I mean, and so taking it out actually relatively easily, making sense of it, I'm getting pretty good at it. I've got some fun toys I've been messing with, not just on my own, but I'm part of there's a few projects I'm working on for some folks that'll help that out. So that, I mean, that's future stuff if we manage to get there and don't blow the planet up in the meantime.
Why do I picture like a Frankenstein kind of lab with, you know, just wires everywhere? There's boxes of who knows what's in it.
There was up until about 4 or 5 weeks ago when we decided to put the house up for sale, at which point most of that had to be cleaned up. And now it looks like a normal laboratory as opposed to something that would blow up at a moment's notice. Funny. So, yeah, it'll all be put back out again. So, you know, from that standpoint, that stuff is interesting because we still don't have an effective way of two things. One, of knowing whose hands are on these keyboards. Mm-hmm. So from an attacker and adversarial standpoint, rarely, if ever, can I track down who did it, why they did it, and what their, you know, what their stuff behind it was. So when you take that and you abstract it another layer and go, I can now influence the very human to do things and I can put things in and take things out. Now we've got some really freaky stuff. So there's some fun things there messing around with. And then honestly, you know, just fundamentally, just our industry as a whole, it's like, how do we do better? How do we improve against the tide? Because the tide says make more money at the cost of everything, but that doesn't get back to what we're meant to do, which is simply protect.
Right.
So how do we change that? I'm kind of perplexed on that one.
Things like social media don't help, you know, when you're managing families and you have, you know, human nature on this side of the screen and you have all these developers on the other side of the screen that are tracking what videos, what ads, what the scroll is, how long they're looking at things. It's the odds are stacked against our children.
Well, now, you add into that the stuff that we're doing. Now, how do I know what's true?
Right.
Wow.
Well, and then there's deepfake and synthetic media and GANs.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Like, holy cow.
And as humans, we just don't ask questions. If I see something on the screen, I'll make a decision before I maybe take a step back and go, is that reality or not? And then who do I ask? How do I track? How do I validate? Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about intelligence and threat intelligence. I mean, part of the jobs I've done in the past and I still mess around with is counter intel. How do I put something out and then fool the masses into believing it? I mean, that's becoming easier and easier and easier the further in that we go to this digital realm.
Yep, I can see that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you get those projects a little further down the road, we'll have to have you come back and tell us a little bit more about it. because now you've got me really interested.
Oh yeah, there's some fun crazy stuff. I mean, I'm very fortunate because I still keep one foot in that .gov.mil side of the world. Mm-hmm. One of the projects came out of the military side because, you know, again, part of my background is the military world,
right?
And we have to send teams back into theater on a reoccurring basis because they don't necessarily get all of the data the first time around. I mean, no fault of their own. So then how do I keep them out of harm's way? How do I more effectively enable them to get all the data effectively? And to that, we started looking at the human side of it. So we started messing around with, you know, the no-touch systems and the biomechanics systems and storing, basically using the body as a USB drive and a few other things. So there's some really, really cool stuff on there. And a lot of that's just to try to protect human life.
Yep.
That's amazing. Stuff. That's excellent. Well, Chris, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, right? Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
I appreciate it.
Really, yeah. Really, really a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Always learn from you. If anybody, we'll have links to your information. You've got a great podcast, Dr. Dark Web. I've listened to several episodes. Fantastic stuff.
Some fun good with that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what's going to happen with that, though. We'll have to see. It's been a little quiet for a few weeks, so we'll have to see.
We have some good stuff on there.
Yeah.
So it's still a great, great resource. And Hillbilly Hit Squad is a fantastic resource. So it's all good stuff, man. Just really keep on doing the good fight. It's good.
Yep.
Working on it, guys.
We appreciate you.
No, pleasure for the time, chaps. Much, 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 much appreciated. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Chris,
take care, guys.
Have a great day. Thanks,
you
sir.
You too. Bye-bye.
It's been an honor. Thank you.
Hi, Cybercrime Junkies. Thanks for listening.
Got a question you want us to address on an episode? Reach out to us at cybercrimejunkies.com. We explore why cybercrime grows daily, how it is funded, productized, and organized, how to protect yourself, and where cybercrime goes to hide. And thanks for being a cybercrime junkie.